Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Tim Ellis. Anchorage police say a brown bear attacked two men in recent days, killing one who was last seen Monday and injuring another Wednesday, who was part of a group searching for the missing man. Police spokesman MJ Tim says searchers found the body of 44-year-old Michael Soltis on a trail Wednesday near the end of Highland Road in Eagle River.
We got multiple officers that are protecting the body from the bear, so we can safely remove the body of the victim and return him to his family.
Investigators say Soltis was last seen Monday night. His vehicle was found at his house near Mile 8 on Highland Road, and friends and family assumed Soltis was out for a hike. They say he was an avid hiker and regularly went out alone from his home. Soltis was reported missing Tuesday, and police and volunteers searched the area through the night and into Wednesday morning using information from Soltis's cell phone. An Alaska State Trooper helicopter also joined the search Wednesday. Police say the same brown bear attacked another man Wednesday morning who was part of a group searching for Soltis. That victim, who's not yet been publicly identified, was rushed to a hospital with serious injuries to his leg, but was expected to survive. Tim, the police spokesman, says the bear probably attacked the second time because the searchers had gotten close to Soltis's body. State forestry firefighters are working to contain a wildfire near Healy that was ignited by two smoldering fires burning in coal deposits at the surface. Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says the fire was spotted Tuesday when it had burned only about 5 acres.
Then the winds picked up and down in that neck of the woods, and the fire got very active and grew to what they were saying, like 600 to 1,000 acres at around 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Mowry says the Louise Creek Coal Seam 2018 fire is now estimated at 1,900 acres. He says it's burning in an area east of the Nenana River that had already burned over several years ago. At that time, crews brought in bulldozers that cut a fire line, or in this case a dozer line, around the area. But he says vegetation is regrown there, providing fuel for the wildfire.
That dozer line is somewhat overgrown, so what we're doing today is we're getting some dozers down there on the scene, and we're going to rework that dozer line to make sure that that fire stays east of that dozer line.
Mowry said Wednesday afternoon that forestry had brought in personnel and equipment Tuesday night and that more was on the way.
We've got one crew on site, the UAF Type 2 crew, and then Type 2 initial attack crew, the Gannett Glacier crew, coming up from Palmer to tie in with them. And then we also have multiple aircraft, two water scooping aircraft and a helicopter equipped with a bucket that will be dropping water.
Mowry said there's zero containment of the fire as of Wednesday evening. He says there's no estimate yet on when it will be contained. He says there aren't any homes or other developed property near the fire. So he says forestry plans to do what it usually does when coal seam fires occur, keep it contained within the dozer line and let it burn out.
We typically don't go in and take action on these fires on the ground because it's dangerous, so typically it's more monitoring them from the air.
Mowry says coal seam fires are fairly common in that area where Usabelli Coal Mine operates. He says the fires present a hazard to firefighters because they could be seriously injured or killed if they were to fall in a burning or smoldering coal seam, and he says the smoke can be hazardous. Meanwhile, the National Weather Service has issued a red flag warning for several areas in the eastern interior where hot and dry conditions and dry lightning strikes have elevated the area's wildfire danger. The red flag warnings are in effect through midnight for the Middle Tanana Valley, the Yukon Flats, the Delta-Deltana area, and the 40 Mile. The cool and rainy weather of the past few weeks has slowed down this year's fire season. So far, state firefighting agencies have reported 222 fires that have burned more than 216,000 acres. That's well below average for this point of the fire season. But the Weather Service says that's likely to change now that warmer, drier, and breezy conditions have set in around the region. A new study headed up by University of Alaska Fairbanks researchers suggests that climate change and mosquitoes may have motivated humans to cross over the Bering Land Bridge from Asia to Alaska. The study, published Tuesday in the journal Royal Society Open Science, found that the land bridge was becoming much wetter and warmer about 15,000 years ago, about the same time humans were first coming into Alaska.
For anyone who has lived in Alaska and even being up onto the North Slope, you know that environment is very tough to, like, move around in with wet kind of conditions. And so that might have prompted people to move out of that environment into a more favorable landscape.
Matt Wooler is a professor in UAF's College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, and he's the study's lead author. He says the wet climate of the low-lying land bridge may have enabled its mosquito population to increase, perhaps so much that it compelled the caribou and the humans who hunted them to get away from the mosquitoes by heading inland en route to the interior.
The Bering Land Bridge, which is where humans were coming across from Asia into North America, is now flooded. But at one time, of course, it was connected. And the site that we chose, St. Paul Island, has been exposed and part of that Bering Land Bridge all the way back at least 18,000 years ago.
A team of international researchers based their findings on a years-long project that included studying a long core of sediment pulled from a lake bottom on St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea. From that, they created an 18,500-year timeline of temperature and precipitation patterns. Wooler says their conclusions were largely based on fossils found in the sediment that came from bugs, plants, and spores.
When those organisms change and the species change, that tells you how the environment changed. And then you have this timeline constructed, and then you can see how the climate changed over time.
Wooler says there's a lot of debate and uncertainty about how and when the earliest humans made their way to North America. He says the study helps answer some of those questions, and he says the data can be used to help improve climate models. He says that should help researchers understand how the Arctic's climate has changed over time and to help them better predict how it might change in the future. Governor Bill Walker was in Fairbanks Wednesday to sign a piece of legislation that would close out the remaining debt that the state incurred under the old oil tax credit program. In an event at Laborers Local 942 Hall, Walker signed House Bill 331, which allows the state to issue $1 billion in bonds to pay the final debts to oil and gas companies that was carried over from the old system. The governor said, quote, "We expect to see new jobs and increased exploration activity as a result of this legislation." The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports Walker also signed House Bill 176. That measure allows emergency medical service providers to recover more of the cost of transporting Medicaid patients than was previously allowed. Medicaid was reimbursing the providers only about 30% of their costs for transporting its patients. HB 176 was introduced by Fairbanks Representative Adam Wohl. The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly's Finance Committee will review an ordinance tonight that would ask voters this fall to consider approving six projects costing a total of $66.4 million. Borough Mayor Chief of Staff Jim Williams says if voters approve the bond package during the October 2nd municipal election, the cost of the projects with interest over the 25-year life of the bonds is estimated at $122.4 million.
That's our best guess calculations with the information that we have now.
William says the bonds would cost borough property owners just over $60 a year for every $100,000 of assessed valuation. He expects the Assembly will hold a public hearing on the bond ordinance and begin considering approval of the measure in next week's meeting.
On the 28th of June, there will be a public hearing at the Assembly Chambers.
The bond package ordinance introduced by Mayor Carl Castle would ask voters' approval to build a bigger animal shelter to replace and demolish the old and overcrowded facility on Pegger Road. The other projects include completion of renovation work at Barnett Magnet School, replacement of Wood River Elementary School's roof, and major work at the Big Dipper Ice Arena, the Juanita Helms Administration Building, and the Carlson Center. I'm Tim Ellis.